All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Tuesday, June 6th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com or DFSR.com here to talk about some Tuesday baseball going, a full slate of games. And I mean, how many pitchers do you think are worth talking about here today? Infinity? Infinity plus one?
We're getting started late today because we just kept listing out guys. And I don't know, is that a blessing or a curse for you when there's so many different reasonable options to choose from?
I don't like it in the sense that it makes the decisions harder, right? And I like decisions to be easy because I find when decisions are easy on pitchers, the rest of it just shakes out pretty quickly. And you can go both ways in this, right? Like you can have it just be a bunch of bums. And I mean, let me put it this way. I'd rather play this slate with a lot of good pitchers on it than if there was just a complete slate full of bums that just you were trying to just kind of hold your nose and figure out who to play. I'd rather go this way because you do stand to have a good chance of just getting the right guy in there. But at the same time, there's some really, really close decisions on guys who are pitching either historically pretty damn well or even for this year are pitching really well. I mean, what do you think? Would you rather have it this way or kind of – I mean, we would both agree that we would just have the clear starting pitcher one and kind of move on with
just
lives,
give me
right?
one guy, I think. Right. Because when this happens, all it really does in my mind is increase variance, and it makes it hard for the average player, the casual player, to make mistakes. And that's really where a lot of the edge comes from. Getting the pitcher right in cash games, I think, is – It's properly rated by pros and people who do this regularly, but I think still underrated in terms of somehow, even though oftentimes the top pitcher will be a 70% start or whatever. I think it's still underrated because it's, you know, especially on FanDuel, the price per dollar or the points per dollar disparity is so great between hitters and pitchers that you just kind of need to get the pitcher right. But when you have five different ways to go reasonably right, it kind of cheapens it a little bit. And it's fine. We shouldn't complain that the baseball system's been great all season and reducing our edge a little bit one night is no big deal. But yeah, I'll take one pitcher over a gaggle any day.
Yeah, when you, especially like a day like yesterday too, just to talk about starting pitchers, when you have a day to look at some of these guys, especially on a shorter slate. I mean, I spent half my day trying to convince people that Samardzija was like the clear cut, no doubt about it, cash game play, which seems so obvious to me. But thankfully, it worked out that he was, and he would end up being pretty chalky too, at least on DraftKings, on both sides actually. But I think even when presented with what I would call a pretty clear cut choice for something, it's still very difficult for some people to make the decision. Now you present, I don't know, eight pretty top tier arms going today, something like that. And I think the decisions are going to be, I think you're going to see a lot of hand wringing. And I actually do think you're going to see ownership percentages, unless something dramatic changes, ownership percentages pretty spread out among these guys. All right, let's get into who some of these guys are. So I'm going to qualify, we're going to talk about each one of these guys as we go, but I'm going to qualify the top kind of flight arms here as Scherzer, Archer, Paxton, DeGrom, Estrada, Arrieta, and then the list sort of drops off after that. Maybe Robbie Ray gets thrown in. Of that group, who do you see as, if you were to pick your cash game pitcher right this second, who do you think it would be?
It'd probably be Chris Archer. You know, Archer this season has been excellent, and it's actually just building off of the last two seasons of success. Like, if you look at Archer's lines the last 2 years, the ERA went from 3.2 up to 4 last season, but the underlying numbers, the 10.7 Ks per nine and the roughly three walks per nine were almost exactly the same. And even the ground ball rate was almost exactly the same. The big thing that changed for him last season was his home run per nine randomly spiked on account of a 16% home run to fly ball ratio. Well, that's back down to 8% this season, which is a little bit lower than his historical averages. But yeah, the XFIP is back in line, 3.3. And I'm just not worried about his makeup as a fantasy pitcher whatsoever with the now almost 11 Ks per nine. And then you just have to look at the matchup, right? I mean, it's a really competitive night for starting pitching. You're going to want not only an ace, but also an ace in a great matchup. And the White Sox certainly represent that. Bottom three in the league in terms of WOBA against right-handed pitching, top five team in terms of striking out against them. It's just an elite spot all around. Archer's pretty heavily favored here at minus 160. Yeah, it's just a great spot. And it doesn't, all the other ones, not that a lot of the other ones have huge question marks around them, but this is the one with the fewest for me.
Yeah, he doesn't have the highest money line on the day, but the park helps him in terms of the implied runs. I think the implied runs for him are about as low as you're going to see. We're short of the Cubs line right now, so I guess that could change, but it's not going to change too much. Archer, he's just been 500 innings of the same guy, right? Like he's spent the last three
really
seasons.
Good, yeah.
Right, the last three seasons, he's been basically identical numbers outside of what you mentioned with the home runs. 2015 through now, like 10 point, let's say average out to 10.5 strikeouts, three walks, and, you know, a 3.3 low something xFIP, and that's it. And that guy's doing it absolutely unlocked. Like, you know what you're going to get. You're going to have to deal with the walks every once in a while. That will at times stop him from going late in games. But still, the guy is an absolute K machine. I think I'm with you. If I was to choose, the system certainly is on that right now. It's not 100% across the board. Well, it is on DraftKings at 10-6. So right now he's in 100% of lineups. It's a little closer on FanDuel. And like I said, we are waiting on a couple, or at least on the Cubs line. With the wind blowing in, looks like it might go on the lower side. After Archer, who can we either start targeting starting pitcher two? Or is there a case to maybe play a couple of these pitchers in cash on FanDuel and just maybe spread out, maybe reduce some of your variance a little bit on the idea that, you know, a lot of these guys are in good spots?
Sure. So if we're talking about going in a different direction, I'm going to want to, like, you know, get a little bit of separation from Archer. And I guess I'm picturing this more for big tournaments. I think for me personally, I am going to play Archer in cash games. But an interesting big tournament option to me is Marco Estrada. Estrada's peripherals this season have been about as good as Archer's. You know, the walks are actually a little bit lower. The strikeouts are just a hair lower. The thing about Estrada is he's a high variance pitcher on account of a pretty low ground ball rate. So, you know, we talked about Archer's home run rate spiking last season. Archer's spiked home run rate last season is about the true expectation for Estrada, about 1.3 home runs per nine. That's a pretty high number to call a guy safe in any context because, you know, one thing breaks the wrong way and all of a sudden he can get chased out of a game or, you know, just have a big inning given up on him or whatever. So, yeah, I wouldn't call him nearly as safe as Archer, but if you just want to talk upside, I think it's absolutely there. You know, Estrada goes out of Toronto at the Rogers Center, heads out to Oakland, much, much more favorable pitcher's park with a lot of foul territory there. And I think it's a spot where, you know, I again hesitate to recommend this for cash game purposes, but if you just want to pay up for some of the big bats going today, then I think Estrada is definitely a guy you can keep on your radar.
We've seen this a couple of times this year with guys late in, not, well, I guess Estrada's not late in his career, but along in his career. I mean, this is age 33 season, right? Who has all of a sudden spiked his K rate. So he had been, for his career, around 8K per nine, little north of 8K per nine guy. Now he's maintained a 10.2 strikeout per nine over 72 innings. And we've seen, we mentioned this maybe, I don't know, five or six guys, I feel like, this year. Samardzija was actually one of them, who has all of a sudden started striking out guys. So then you look at, well, what is he doing differently? I don't know if we talked about this with Estrada before, but if you look at PitchFX stuff for him, he was throwing a cut fastball 22% of the time last year. He's almost completely abandoned that in favor of just a straight four-seam fastball, which he's now throwing 50% of the time. That's up from 37%. That's a huge dramatic shift for a guy. Like, he just completely changed his approach, right? Like, he just abandoned one pitch, basically abandoned the curveball too, and is now just, he's really just a fastball changeup guy. That's it. Like, something like 80% of his pitches are fastballs or changeups. I mean, that's almost like a reliever, right? Like, a reliever is usually just a two-pitch kind of guy, and that's why they're able to make their bones one time through an order or just maybe like through a couple batters. Do you think that kind of thing is sustainable if you think that the shift for him has just been – like, if this just seems like it's intentional, he's just doing something different, and he's just striking out, I don't know, 25% more guys per nine than he has been in the past?
Well, no, I would bet a significant amount of money that Estrada, assuming he doesn't get injured, ends the season at significantly below 10 Ks per nine. I'd say it's going to end up closer to a strikeout per inning if you account for the first 70 innings of the season. I mean, we do have precedent for guys really changing up their repertoire and becoming much more effective later in their careers, but for every Cliff Lee that actually sustains it, there's 15 guys you completely forget about because they just end the season with the exact same line that they had the previous year. So I would guess that Estrada's probably more in that direction, but all that being said, this is still just a nice matchup with Oakland as well, another top five teams in terms of striking out against right-handed pitching. And if Estrada's gains are real this season, or if Oakland hasn't had time to scout him or take him seriously perhaps, then I think he could get to them. Worth noting on Estrada, again, to caution you against playing him in cash games, in his last seven starts, he's got three where he allowed five earned runs or more. That's just not a profile of a guy that you're going to take on a night with such a wealth of pitching depth here. I just don't think he's a guy that you're going to land on for your cash game purposes.
Yeah, I mentioned kind of briefly before, but Arrieta, I think, is in the kind of the same position as the two other guys. His numbers, again, are very similar to Archer and Estrada this year, more than 10 strikeouts per nine, less than 2.5 walks. XFIP sitting right in that 3.5 range. Like all the time with Cubs games at this point of the day, we're waiting on a run line to come in, and that's almost always just based on which way the wind is blowing. The wind, according to what I'm looking at now, is blowing in. if that's the case, and it projects to be blowing in around game time too, because obviously I think these things switch around, but if this line came in at like 7.5, we have it just kind of set at 8 right now, but if it came in at 7.5 or even lower, you could see Arrieta creep into the discussion here. Marlins don't strike out as much as the other two teams you mentioned, the White Sox and the A's, so that helps Archer and Estrada. But I can see he's a minus 200 favorite right now, Arrieta. I believe that's the highest money line on the day. Getting that now, I take that back. There's a couple higher than we're going to get to those guys in a second. But Arrieta, if the wind is blowing in, I know the Marlins don't strike out as much. Could you make a case for him in cash?
I mean, I suppose you could. I do think the line will settle at 8 or higher, just for what it's worth. Just a gut check thing. You're kind of more in tune with the lines in general than I am, but just kind of where my feelings are right now. And my feelings matter, Doug. They really do.
Well, feelings are the worst thing you can ever do in this kind of thing.
You're absolutely right about that. But, I just caught myself as I was saying it and just wanted to keep going with it.
Oh boy. We're going to start off talking about your feelings. That's the mistake everyone makes.
Feelings podcast. Well, but no, Arrieta, I think he struggles from some of the same bugaboos that I mentioned with Estrada. Like, there's been a very inconsistent performance there this season. I don't mind the peripherals. The peripherals are strong, but in Wrigley, he's a guy who's given up, let's see here, four earned runs in three of his last five starts. He's got a good handful of spots this season where he's just gotten kind of blown up. So, the Marlins, not a terrific hitting team, but they don't strike out quite as much. I just think, we looked at this very carefully beforehand. Any name you're going to throw out there for cash game purposes on FanDuel, I'm probably going to say is not viable because I just prefer to play Archer. So,
sure. Yeah, and I got you.
Spoiler there. Alert. But I do think Arrieta is definitely in the conversation. And I think what this actually speaks to is tonight being a pretty good night to go off board for big tournaments, because you're going to be able to get separation from by taking a good pitcher in a good spot, because I don't think a lot of your peers out there are going to be considering Arrieta tonight. And he's definitely, talk about a guy who can go out there and get you 10Ks over the course of a nice extended start. He's in that conversation, but just not my favorite one.
He's more in the conversation for me on DraftKings, where he's only 9,000, right? So 9,000 at this kind of money line for a guy who strikes, just has this kind of K potential, is firmly in starting pitcher two category, just kind of territory for me. That is, we didn't even mention Scherzer. Scherzer's 13,000. I don't think you just need to pay up for him in cash games today. There's just plenty of other guys sitting a tier or two below that have almost the same strikeout potential as he does. So just getting him against LA. I know he's probably the best pitcher on the day, but I don't think we need to pay for him. But after that, so Arrieta at only 9,000, that leaves you a lot of room, right, for bats, even if you pair him with one of these other guys. And the other guy actually in his price range is Paxton. Paxton actually does have the highest money line of the day. He's coming in at minus 210 right now. He was, I think last game was his first game back from injury. He was on a pitch count. He got to about 85 pitches. It stands to reason that's going to increase tonight, probably into the mid-90s. Would the pitch count thing still worry you? Again, this is another guy. This is like almost the theme. I could have put some of these peripherals just on like a recording. 10.5 strikeouts per nine, a little less than 2.5. Sub-XFIP, sub-3 XFIP. That's been basically the same exact numbers for every guy I've mentioned so far. Would the pitch count thing worry you on Paxton? And if it didn't, is he kind of a clear starting pitcher too?
Yeah, the pitch count thing, I'll want some more news on that before we get going. That's another thing. We talk about this a lot and across all the sports, but ultimately what really wins the day, generally speaking, is just opportunity. And if you have opportunity, then you have the opportunity to put up fantasy points. And if you're not on the field, you simply don't. And that sounds like a pretty obvious and straightforward thing to say, but I'd say it's the most common mistake I see among our users and just people in the industry writ large, and that they underrate the difference it makes to simply be on the field. Like we talked about this with Benintendi actually this weekend, where he was batting. This is, and batters and pitchers do relate here, so follow me for a second. On Saturday, people were concerned that he was in the optimal lineups. Well, he was batting second among all the incredible power that Boston has in their lineup. And it's kind of to the point where if you have a guy with any skill set at all batting second on Boston for less than 3,000, you'll consider him. And mostly the thing that matters is you are a major league caliber player and you get to be on the field, right? And so with Paxton, if you're going to compare him to his peers tonight, you're going to want to know pretty definitively that he's going to have the same chance. Because, with all these other good pitchers that we're talking about, like Archer, like if we decide that Archer's baseline of being out there is like 6 or 7 innings, but Paxton's upside is 6 or 7 innings, where there are some edge cases where Archer goes 8, 9 innings, then I think it's, the choice becomes pretty clear. I will say with Paxton, in terms of raw stuff, I think he's the best best pitcher, just well, the combination of stuff and Park and matchup here. I do think he's the next best guy on for me on DraftKings, and if I didn't hear that he was going to have some really ridiculously low pitch count, I would love the top lineup that we have currently that features both Archer and Paxton. But yeah, I'm going to be watching that pitch count news very closely here.
Yeah, it was. It's interesting about just pricing these pricing algorithms in general, because a lot of these, I would just classify a lot of these pitchers as just coming in at pretty low price points, like Estrada at 92. Arrieta at 9,000, Paxton at 8,800, even Archer at 10,600 is low. And I think that's actually directly related to there being a game in Coors today. So like all those bats have taken, superficial jump up. I don't know if superficial is the right word. And just a jump up in the algorithm. And I wonder if that kind of like, because all the salaries need to fit into a certain just overall number, that you see the pitching numbers kind of just trend down a little bit, or you just get guys like Robbie Ray at 11,900, which I know he's facing San Diego, and I'm sure like that's factored into the thing a little bit too. Like if a guy's facing San Diego, then they just get the price to come up a little bit. But I think that what that's caused is to have some of these other really good pitchers just come just damn cheap on DraftKings. Like under 10, under 9,500 for those three guys seems like you're completely getting away with something. And actually, I think that what it does is it makes it so that, I mean, probably on FanDuel too, I don't think you even need to consider the other guys down the chain, right? Like after this top seven or so guys that we've talked about today, that is a lot of guys. But what I'm saying, but there's also a lot of other guys pitching, right? There's still a lot of pitchers that we haven't mentioned here that people will probably want to make a case for. But when you get down to like these lower levels, it's just so hard to imagine a guy like, say, even like Pomerantz against the Yankees or Tanaka. These guys are like real arms, right? McCarthy. It's sure. Still so hard to see some of these guys being the top, like being in top lineups simply because the names above them are just so good, if that makes sense.
We haven't even mentioned Max Scherzer. Yeah, like there's a lot of guys.
Well, that's what I mean. Like he's just so I mentioned just as being too expensive. But like I guess I mean like these second tier pitchers who on another night, you know, there's been plenty of times we've considered Tanaka and Pomerantz and guys like this There's nobody else. Here, I don't think they even deserve not too much of a mention. It's really hard to imagine them outstripping the value that you get on some of the other guys higher up the chain. Okay, after those guys...
You're exactly right. But I think it's like, it shines a light on for me why I like to be cautious about talking about considering people for cash game purposes. Because on a given night, usually I'm considering a maximum of two guys for my actual like 50-50 and double up lineups that I'm going to click submit on. It's like two guys max. And oftentimes it's just one guy that's very clear cut for me personally. And again, I do think that's the spot actually where I like to hedge the least, because I think that's where the most edges gain. It's such a high leverage position. And I think on DraftKings, you know, one of the reasons why I tend to play a little bit more on FanDuel is it's oftentimes for me harder to feel safe with my top DraftKings two pitchers as opposed to my top one guy on FanDuel. Tonight is an exception to that. Like tonight, you're going to get two really, really good spots on DraftKings, and anyone who doesn't made the wrong decision. So yeah, I think DraftKings actually is a very, very good case for putting a nice investment in there tonight.
That's actually why I prefer DraftKings on a night-to-night basis, because I figure if it's hard for me, it's hard for everybody. And at that point, I trust our system so much that if it's even putting out something that doesn't look that great, and even at times it's put out things that didn't look that great, and you still can get away with it, like Verlander over the weekend, let's say, right? Like Verlander,
yeah, that's true.
Verlander just he gets hurt basically, he hurts his groin. But actually, I think tried to pitch through it a little bit, and I think that was part of some of his problem too. But you're still able to get away with it because your decision making on DraftKings cascades really quickly into bad decision making because of those two starting pitching. And I think that is just a really hard thing. Like if you're not using optimization algorithms for that kind of thing on DraftKings, I would just classify you as dead. Like I don't know how you're even making lineups like I don't know how you're making positive EV lineups over the long term on DraftKings just because the decision making is so hard. So that's actually where I do trust.
Right. I think the edge is there for sure. I just think the variance is higher, and that's kind of
right
the sense that I get there. And yeah, I mean, I maybe I'm a coward for not wanting to take on the
you are a coward variants, but no, you are a coward. I think that's been pretty well established. Other guys, other ace type guys that we actually didn't mention today, I mean I kind of nodded quickly at Ray. I get that he's playing San Diego. It's a good spot. He's probably a little too expensive considering how much value you're getting from a few guys cheaper that we mentioned before. I mean, DeGrom's another guy where he just is another kind of ace-level pitcher.
Great pitcher.
Yeah, right. Just like pitching in a bad ballpark. Texas does strike out a lot. That's a guy you could see having a huge upside game if they're, you know, he's just able to get the swings and misses that the Rangers definitely have in those bats. So this is all to say, the Rangers rank fifth. You know, it's so funny. Like Rangers rank fifth overall in total strikeouts from the right-hand side of the plate against righties this season. And DeGrom like barely gets a mention 20 minutes into just the pitcher part of the podcast. This is, I think we talk about baseball every single day this year, either on the pod or just off it, or at least thought about it. I would call this the best day of pitching that we've seen this year, and that includes opening day. Like, I think this is the most, this is the highest concentration of just good arms that we've seen on any slate. I don't know if you agree with that or if that's me being...
No, it feels that way. I mean, there's no, the difference is it's the deepest night that we've had, for sure. I wouldn't say it's the night I feel most confident in by any stretch, but
no.
Yeah, in terms of overall depth, you know, just a huge wide variety of options. I think you're looking pretty good here.
All right, before we get to some of the bats, hit us up with a sponsor.
Yeah, so I'd love to talk about FantasyFactor.com. FantasyFactor is a DFS site that you can go and play on, just like the other ones you do, FanDuel and DraftKings. But the big thing that you get on FantasyFactor that you don't get elsewhere is you get insulation from the big sharks who are going to put in 100, 200 lineups a night in any given contest and kind of scoop up a lot of the equity that's there. FantasyFactor is populated by much more casual players, people putting in between $5 and $25 a night across one to four contests, somewhere like that. And that's really nice if you're just trying to get into DFS, get your feet wet without getting eaten alive. Fantasy Factor is really good for that. And they also are great because they'll give you a $5 free entry ticket if you go in and sign up with promo code DFSR. So it's fantasyfactor.com, promo code DFSR. They also have twice weekly free rolls on Mondays and Tuesdays, $100 free rolls that you can go grab there too. So yeah, check them out. Fantasy Factor has been great to us, and we hope you'll be good to them as well.
Right on. While we were talking about pitching, the Cubs line actually did come in. Like I said, 7.5 called it. So I'm right, you're wrong.
Dude, you're so smart and awesome.
A day ending in Y where I get that kind of thing right. So let's talk about some of the bats today. The big game, obviously, or the big one that people will be on most people's minds is the game in Coors. The Indians go to play Colorado. I don't know. I looked at the run line here. Does this strike you as like a low run line? It's only 10.5 right now. And I was like, oh, I wonder who's pitching for these guys. But it's Clevinger versus, and I can't remember.
Sensatella.
This 10.5, it started at 11, has come down. It came down, but it came down more on the Rocky side of things than it did on the Cleveland side. Do you think we see the run line tick back up to 11 here, or maybe we see some more runs on the Cleveland side, or are people just kind of getting wise to Coors? Like, what do you think the situation here is?
Yeah, I do think the line will climb just a little bit. I mean, we don't really see lines too much higher than 11 over the course of the season, and that's what I'm seeing on my side right now. So that seems somewhat reasonable. The big question for our daily fantasy purposes is, do these guys represent a value on a full slate, right? Because that's really the math we wind up having to do. At this point, they're not showing up in optimal lineups. Now, that could be because we have a relatively expensive pitcher in Archer going today, or it could be that there's just plenty of other mid-range value to go around. And I suspect it's sort of the latter, but I was curious as to your take there for cash game purposes, ignoring big tournaments for a second.
Well, I think Lindor is there. So you do get one right now at shortstop. And that's more because, well, that's going to be one of these things where shortstop has just been kind of just a rough position overall. And there's the firepower, I guess, at shortstop is concentrated just among a few guys, and then there's just some real bottom feeders that are getting opportunities, mostly at the bottom of the lineups. Kind of like sort of representative of catcher also this year. You see a lot of the same names kind of cropping up just because there's really not that many guys who represent value. I could see Lindor being in there. I take that back. I saw that line has come back to 11, so I actually just made sure to make the update. Lindor is a guy that's up there. I mean, some of these other guys though are just too expensive. We have most of them as the highest raw points guy. Guys like Kipnis, you know, who if he's going to hit lead off here, 4,100 is just kind of a lot to pay for him. At some point, you need to make decisions about if I'm going to roster one of these pitchers over 10,000. I just can't keep paying an insane premium on guys just because they happen to like just walk into the clubhouse, of course, and walk out into the field.
Yeah, that's really it, right? And I think if you're going to go, you could engineer some scenarios where you grab Estrada and then you can go a little heavier in cores. You know, maybe you get a bunch of those Indians, Santana, Lindor, etc. And you're feeling pretty good, but for cash game purposes, that's just not where I want to be, I don't think.
Well, the other thing, too, that is helpful in being able to avoid this game is there are, I know we mentioned a lot of good pitchers. There are some just kind of dreadfully awful pitchers pitching today. And there's a lot of other teams with run lines, at least to start, over five. And when we're looking at, if you're going to pay, let's say you're paying 20% more than average, something like that. That's what I looked at around what happens when teams going back in the course, what happens to their prices. If you're going to pay a 20% bump on some of those guys, or you just get a team that's with slightly lower run line, but the pricing has just kind of stayed where it was, I think we could probably pivot to some of these other teams pretty easily. Where, if we're not going to look in cores, where's a place we can start?
Yeah, my process for looking for stacks, especially for big tournaments, is really to target pitching rather than hitting. Hitting matters, of course. You know, you don't want to get guys who can't hit any home runs if you're going for upside, or I guess no home runs or stolen bases. But for my upside, I'm really looking at the Astros pretty heavily. Right now, I don't see a line on this game. I suspect that it will come in pretty high because, you know, the combination of David Paulino and Jacob, spelled with a K, Junis, whoever that is, pitching for the Royals, leads me to believe that we might be in a pretty good spot. If you're unfamiliar with Junis's work, I don't blame you. He's not really a prospect by any stretch. In his first start, or through six innings this season, he's allowed more walks than innings pitched, which is always a good sign for our purposes if we want to stack against a guy. And he also has the unhappy circumstance of allowing a lot of fly balls. So you take all those factors together. You take the fact that the Astros have added a lot of quality left-handed or switch hitting bats this season, and I think that's an excellent spot if you just want to try and pile up a lot of runs in a hurry.
No, you were right. And actually, while you were talking, I refreshed some of the Vegas odds stuff, and it actually is Houston 10 over under minus 150, which is going to put them right around 5.5 implied runs. Yeah, and actually, that would be
huge pile. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that would be. I mean, we had set a sort of a default setting in the system before that line came in, so they were coming in low. As we rerun projections here in a second, you are going to see some more Houston guys show up, because I believe that is going to be, after Cleveland, probably the highest implied run line of the game. I'm all with it. Those guys' prices climbing up a little bit, but you're still getting sort of deals on guys like Springer. Well, I know, I take that back. Springer's prices come up here on FanDuel a little bit. He had been existing in like this mid-3,000s range for a long time. But
I think Josh Reddick is still a deal against the right-handed bat. I mean, if he's
yeah, that's true. 3,600. He should be hitting second in the lineup. So Houston, a great spot. But there's just some other teams here too. I like the Seattle. It's weird to kind of target a team in a pitcher's ballpark like Seattle is today. But they are also just getting lucky enough to face Hector Santiago, who has been an absolute pile of garbage this season. He really hasn't been good ever, and is one of these guys that continues to just get major league gigs for reasons that are not completely unknown, but there's just so many of these guys. It must just be a real thing, because there's so many of these guys that exist that are so far below what you think just the average arm that maybe is in the minors can do, but that is clearly just not the case. Santiago, a career, and this is over 750 innings, a career 5 xFIP guy, who's just kind of run a little hot, or maybe he's not the right guy for xFIP because his ERA is a little bit lower, 3.92.
He's one of those weird guys where, you know, he gives up a lot of fly balls. He's a lefty. There's some deception there. You know, he could drive a lower BABIP than the average pitcher or something. Like, he's just an unusual pitcher, and I think that probably he gets the systems like xFIP that are painting everything with a broad brush will sometimes miss out on the peripheries. That, all that being said, he's still bad. Like, if we're just talking about what degrees of bad Hector Santiago is, and he's still plenty bad for your stack.
Right, just like real bad instead of just like historically awful, I guess would be the better way to put it. Yeah. We have Mariners for 5.15 implied runs, which is that's a lot for this ballpark for them, which really does speak to Santiago's just lack of just overall ability. Top of the lineup, they should run something like Segura, and then Valencia, I think they've been hitting second in the lineup. Oh, he may have gotten hurt. But anyway, Valencia second, Cano, and then
Cruz.
Cruz, and he's a real lefty killer in that lineup. So I think you have a nice spot for Seattle here, coming a little bit cheaper. The ballpark obviously doesn't help him a lot, but Santiago kind of makes up for all the ballpark issues.
Sure, just his ground ball rate alone, like a career ground ball rate of 33% is about low. Like we talked about the xFIP, that's driven a lot by the low ground ball rate. He just doesn't do anything to try to keep the ball in the park, and while Safeco will do some of that for you. He's not helping his own cause in any way whatsoever. So yeah, I like that stack quite a bit.
I have one more team, but I don't know if you had another team you wanted to throw out before.
I have another team, but why don't we do your team first, buddy?
I like the Mets here too. I mean, the Mets are another team.
Too, buddy. I grew up in New Jersey.
Oh yeah, do you still like teams? Then I don't really. I was gonna say I had someone email me the other day and asked me like what my favorite teams are. It was like sort of like a survey about something, and then I just like. had to just be honest and say, like, I don't really root for anybody anymore. Like, this job is just kind of stripped away all of all of my
lineup is my favorite team.
Exactly. Like, my rooting interests are kind of, I think it's just probably, it's better from a subjective nature. I don't know if I really want to ever go back to being a fan either of teams, just like rooting for laundry ever again. Anyway, no, I like the Mets here. Dylan G has a major league gig at the absolute league minimum. That makes sense because he's not very good. The Mets get a big, pretty big park upgrade here, going to Texas. Conforto, guys like Bruce, even Duda, all coming. Duda's coming under 3,000 at first base. I kind of like that, fifth in the lineup. Conforto, he's kind of expensive, but he's been pretty good this year. And then Jay Bruce, 3,600 on FanDuel. I think you get a nice mix of mid-tier pricing on the Mets in the better side of their split against the guy who's just not very good in a plus-up ballpark. So I can see them. I can see definitely stacking the Mets here for value. Also, if they just ever decided to move a guy like Granderson sort of back up in the lineup, I don't think you're going to see it anytime soon. But he and Reyes, these are guys, they will jostle the lineup around every once in a while to be able to grab a really cheap guy near the top. So Mets are definitely a team I want to keep an eye on tonight.
Yeah, that's a persuasive case, Doug. I'll give you that one. I'm actually, you know, kind of getting excited about this slate a little bit. I think one thing that the depth of pitching does allow for is more interesting GPP or big tournament options. And when you have so many different teams where you can grab a bunch of value, like maybe you go like Neil Walker, Granderson, I don't know, you just stack some of those left-handed Mets bats. Well, Neil Walker's switch hitter, but you get the idea. I think that is a pretty good spot. Another team that I'm looking at also, it's similar sort of situation, is the Cardinals. You know, going from a league average park to a great hitter's ballpark in Cincinnati, and also just a great matchup up against Tim Adelman. Adelman's kind of like a rich man's Hector Santiago, like he, in that he's a little bit better than him, but not by too much, man. I mean, the 36% ground ball rate for his career is pretty darn atrocious. Not a lot of Ks, a lot of walks, and like I said, the fly balls should lend themselves to big innings. The Cardinals don't necessarily stack a ton of left-handed bats, but one of the things that I've talked about almost ad nauseum at this point on the podcast is that you just don't need every single guy on a team in order to form a good stack. So, you know, maybe you build around Matt Carpenter there in the stack. He's still very affordable. A lot of upside there and just a reasonably high floor as well. So, yeah, I'll look at the Cardinals tonight. And I think that they'll be one of the lesser owned stacks that has just as much upside in my mind as any of these other squads.
Yeah, it's interesting too because we're coming off a short slate last night with the Cardinals where they were really heavily owned and just didn't do a whole lot for people and that kind of thing.
People have fatigue, and especially when they have other options, they're going to be all over them.
Yeah, no, I think that's a reason you see them just because you see them at like, I don't know, in tournaments, something like 9% and lower owned, I'd say, just because, and probably rightfully so, all things being equal, just because there are a lot of other teams. You're just going to see low ownership, I think, kind of across the board on everybody today because there's so many options on both sides of the ball. It's a really rare day in that way. Like, right, like there's just, it's this weird mashup of absolutely excellent pitchers and then absolutely terrible pitchers with all the pricing sort of in the middle. And when that's the case, I think this is one of it's an interesting day. It's going to be one of the more difficult days, I think, overall, just because it's almost going to be impossible to make a mistake, if that makes sense. Like, you're going to, no matter which way you're making lineups, it's going to be hard to go completely wrong on all of your ideas, just because sort of the wealth of value you have across the industry.
Yeah, I think you're spot on.
Of course, Sam. That's a great way to end. Just me, you telling me I'm spot on. We're from DFSR.com, Daily Fantasy Sports Rankings. You can head over to the site and go to /MLB, and that will give you a free 3-day trial to our projection system for MLB, which we think is about as good as you'll ever find in the industry. And if you want any proof of that, well, I don't know if it's proof, but if you want some testimonials, head on over to our chat room and just ask. We had one of our users just even the other day in a single entry GPP, took down 11 grand on FanDuel, and that was just using the overall top lineup in the system and just putting in one of the higher stakes single entry GPPs 11 grand later. And you can read that article on the site right now. So dfsr.com/MLB will get you that free 3-day trial, buddy. Be back again later in the week talking more baseball.
Yeah, buddy. See you there.